Hello and welcome to Rallying Data. I am Lou Hartwood, and today I am joined by my co-host Henry Palmer for this week's episode.
How are we doing? Welcome. This is our first podcast, so thought we might just quickly introduce ourselves before we do too much, as we're all just getting to know each other here. So, Lou, why don't you tell us who you are?
Sure, can do. So obviously, as you said, my name is Lou Hartwood. I started rowing in high school. Quickly fell in love with the sport and decided that I wanted to continue on and row in college. And so, I came to Boston. I rowed on the Charles. I studied computer science and business. After I graduated, I became a software engineer, and wanted to continue rowing. And that's where I met Henry. You were forming some competitive boats with some recent grads in the area going to Henley. And that's our first interaction, was the athlete coach relationship.
Awesome. And I'm Henry Palmer. Similar background. I started rowing here in the States in high school and jumping in big eights and things. I was fortunate enough to quickly be introduced to sculling. Did that for right out of the gates. And went off to the NESCAC and rode there, and then was fortunate enough to be able to head back across the pond to the UK, where my family's from, and rode there for a number of years. Got to kind of learn how they do it, a little bit differently over there, sort of the club system, sort of their training, their whole training centers, and everything, which was fantastic. After a number of years, I came back to the States, to Boston, and started coaching here. Met Lou, just got involved in the Boston rowing scene, which was awesome. And have just tried to stay involved ever since. I now work in marketing, digital marketing. So I spend a lot of time in data and analyzing pieces, but that's who we are. And we're excited to have you joining us. So this is, as I mentioned, this is our first podcast of a series on data in rowing. We're pretty excited to have this getting going. And our goal here is to really just explore all different facets of data in rowing, whether it's from statistical to telemetry or to other pieces. We're excited. We're going to dig in, and hopefully over the series, we're going to start to learn about these different things. Lou and I have both sort of experienced a lot of these different pieces ourselves. And then we're also going to hopefully do some research on it and just engage and talk about what's out there. However, before we get too far along, this podcast series wouldn't be possible without the support of our sponsors. So we just want to give a quick shout out to them and recognize who they are. Just kind of tell you about them quickly. And then we'll get on with the show. But really excited to have them supporting this and helping us push this forward. So our first sponsor is Rose and Thorn, makers of active sports bras with a difference. They make a sports bra for the everyday active woman. If you're interested, you get a 10% discount using the coupon ROW10 at the checkout. The website is www.roseandthorn.com.
Cool. Our second sponsor is Just Strong, which is an athletic lifestyle brand for strong women. They offer encouragement, support, and to never give up. Just Strong athletic lifestyle brand. Their website is www.juststrong.com, and you get a 10% discount when you buy using the coupon code REBCARO10, which is REBCAROE10, and you'll be supporting Rowing Chat.
Awesome. And our final sponsor is Mind Games, a book by Annie Vernon. Win yourself a personally signed and dedicated copy of Mind Games' book, which is all about how elite athletes train their minds to help them win in sport. To enter, tell us what gives you the impetus to win by writing a comment on the page, rowing.chat/win-mindgames-games-book. And if you buy a signed copy, you can buy them at rocktheboat.uk. You can find both links on rowing.chat/sponsors. So that's our sponsors. And these are the great people that help us make this podcast series possible. So one of the things, before we get too deep into it, what we wanted to talk about out of the gates was basically, Lou, different topics in the rowing data space, you know, different opportunities out there. So why don't you give us a few of them, and we'll talk through some of what's out there.
Sure. So I think there's a lot of areas we can touch upon, but one area I think is particularly interesting that we can start with is collecting the data. I mean, so there's a lot of tools coming out. I mean, people generally know about, you know, Cox Boxes, NKs, the Speed Coaches. There's other brands out there. You know, we're starting to get into biometric data, you know, heart rate, you know, depending on how closely you track a food log. But you like, a big piece of this is making sure you're not only collecting this data, but the way you go about collecting it is you have standards in place. You can't just, you know, casually collect, I ate some chips today or something. We did this piece today and not have it be carefully recorded. Otherwise, when you're going to do your analysis later, I mean, the quality of the results may not be good. So you have to be very careful about, you know, how you're collecting this data, what you're collecting. There's a lot of mess that can get involved in that. I mean, you're sifting through, things. That's a big part of your job, actually. It's just, you know, maintenance of this.
You're reminding me of the term that you and I have talked about being a data janitor.
Correct. Right? Yeah. So,
cleaning it up and making sure that what you have there is sensible.
Agreed. I've heard at different talks here and there that, you know, a data scientist's job, 50% of it can just be cleaning the data. Making sure the data you're collecting, it doesn't have bad values. Making sure the values generally make sense. You know, doing a sanity check. If you're collecting heights, you don't see someone that's 3 centimeters tall, as an example. And then you can go do your analysis. Another piece of this is to make sure, you know, say let's go back to biometric data or rowing your athlete related data. If you collect something like a heart rate through a strap or something like that, that may be one thing. But if you start collecting sleep related data, if you start tracking how an athlete is sleeping or how long they're sleeping or sleeping patterns, that may get a bit more invasive. And
now we're starting to kind of touch into ethics in a way. And Lou mentioned, obviously you studied computer science stuff. I actually studied philosophy in college. So this is an area that I love to talk about.
Yeah.
It's an interesting piece, right? That how far do we take it, and, what's ethical to measure there? Obviously there's some advantages, but as you said, you used the word invasive. Like, how far does that go? And is it too much?
Agreed. I mean, another aspect to the ethical collection of data, which I've come across more frequently, is scraping unstructured data from websites. You need to make sure they don't have either in their terms of service or something called like a robots.txt file, something in place to say, please don't scrape our website, that you typically look for if you're trying to ethically scrape a web page. And also, you don't want to hit their web page, 10,000 times in a minute or some example like that. I mean, you have to be careful about how you're doing it so you don't crash the subject. So I think that's a big piece of it as well, which we can, definitely go in depth into. And so once you have all this data, I mean, the really interesting stuff starts to happen. I mean, you get it, you clean it, and then you can start to look at it. And then that's where, you can say, what type of insights can we get from this? Are we, if you're collecting data and you can see that, are the power curves of your athletes all making the same shape? Are there real issues there that you couldn't have seen just with your eye? And I think, that's something, I remember you were saying you looked into when you did a bit of coaching, after we weren't part of the same club, where you were looking at the power curves of your athletes and trying to.
It's an interesting piece because you can also, and this is, what's so cool about this data stuff, is the ability to sort of develop a hypothesis and then use the information to affirm that and to, you know, basically take a logic-based approach to how you want to, you know, approach your rowing. And I think that's what all these subjects that you just kind of, you know, briefly touched on, this ability just to bring a greater lens to, you know, an examination to what it is that you're trying to do and you know, having that greater understanding.
Great. Yeah, there's a brief cut out there, but I think I got the gist of it. You know, it sounds like you're just talking about the using data and the analysis to get a deep understanding of what's going on in the boat and not just at the surface.
Exactly.
Okay, perfect.
So cool. So one of the things, I mean, I think, you know, you just touched on so many different areas there. But one of the things that, you know, we thought tonight in sort of chatting about this, you know, how to open up a podcast series on data was basically start with a 30,000 foot view and ask the simple question, why should you care about rowing data? I mean, clearly, you get in the boat. I mean, we have all this new technology developing, new toys coming into, you know, into the marketplace and so on. Obviously, rowing's been around for a very long time, and people have been very successful without it. So, you know, what are these pieces, and you know, how do they fit into the mix? But really, before that, yeah, asking that question of why should you, you know, care about this stuff. So, you know, what do you think, Lou?
So I think it's interesting. I mean, we've discussed this where you may see either a coach or an athlete or a spectator who watches a race and you say, what's going on with that boat? And everyone just strokes their shoulders and say, I have no idea. And you know, as a coach, you want to be able to know, like, was that performance on par with how they've been? Was that a bad performance? Did something happen? You know, what's going on? You want to, you know, shrink the number of question marks you have in your head and not just wonder, you know, I thought they were going to do so much better.
Yeah.
It's like not studying for the final, then saying, oh, I wonder, I have no idea why I did so poorly. I mean, yeah.
Well,
you didn't got to do your homework ahead of time. I mean,
and we talked about this concept of, you know, what gets measured gets managed.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you know, and you're exactly right to bring, you know, back the idea of like doing your homework or, you know, preparing for the exam. It's the same type of process, in my opinion, where, you know, you do this preparation, you measure these pieces, and then you're better set up to be able to manage them, you know, throughout the course of the season, and, you know, and then actually make it, you know, make inferences, make, you know, logic-based decisions, and, you know, as squad sizes grow, as you're managing more athletes, and how can you bring a basically objective approach to making decisions? So yeah, I think you're absolutely right there.
Totally agree. Yeah, and I think you know, it's not just about recording the data on pieces of paper, but it's making sure that, you know, if there's multiple factors in play, you have a system in place to record these, and that way, if you're saying, okay, we're doing this 2 mile piece, and I'm comparing it against a 2 mile piece from last year. You know, were the conditions the same? Was it the same point in the season? Qualitative things, you know, the morale of the team isn't as, you know, quite as high as it was last year. You know, the things you can, I mean, not just hard numbers, but, you know, things that, you know, you should be, you know, measuring, yes, but then also, you know, taking note of, and that way you can say, okay, you know, go ahead. You know, you look at your.
How many times, you know, you go on the water and, you know, you do a workout, and, you know, if the coach doesn't take any time or something like that, you have no record of what that was. If you know, 2 weeks later, you do the same thing again, and maybe you went faster, and you have to be able to sort of, you know, if you really want to be constructive about it, keep a log of these pieces. And I think what's interesting is also, and, you know, more for a later time, but we're seeing more and more opportunities with devices, with GPS, with, you know, all these other monitors to actually really actively track those things. You know, how often is it, you know, do you go for a run and turn Strava on, for example? And now you know, like, next time you do it, how you compared. And all of a sudden you have a better picture of your performance. And I think that we're seeing that same thing happen in rowing. And, you know, one of the very cool things about some of the technology that's developing is it's just giving coaches more tools in their toolbox to help make informed decisions and to help improve their crews and to help educate.
Agreed. I think it's so interesting that, you know, rowing is considered such a team sport. And, you know, at the team level, you can look at, you know, boat results. And at the individual level, you can look at, you know, the power on the oar or the erg score of the person in the boat. But, you know, without a good data management system, it's hard to say what combinations of athletes are, you know, quantitatively making the boat faster.
And I think we should be clear, though, you know, we're not necessarily talking, or at least in my opinion, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, you know, there are a lot of different ways to do this. Mm-hmm. But just from a rudimentary level, you know, and a log, you know, it doesn't you don't have to have necessarily a spreadsheet. I think I tuned out a little bit there. You know, I think you can have, basically coaches can have logs and so on and so forth. And this is a great first step to understanding what's going on and basically, yeah, measuring and then managing it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree.
So one of the things that you and I were also talking about, though, which I think is important to bring up here, is the question of what is the role of the coach, and, you know, how do they fit into this equation, right? Because now you have these new devices and these new inputs and your ability to measure these things. How has that shifted? How does it supplement coaching? All these different pieces. What have you seen?
So I think that's a really great point you're making. So in high school, I was unaware of most things, like any typical high school.
As we all are. As we all are.
You know, you go in the boat, the coach and the coxswain say, basically tell you pull harder, and that, you know, there's a million things you can do to fix your technique. I tended to appreciate that approach of just, you know, telling us there's always more to be done. But then, you know, as you get to college, you know, you find that at least, you know, when we were competing, it's much tighter. Everyone is already very driven, trying to be their best, and the coaches are, you know, they're more closely monitoring things, or at least I was more aware of it. And I think, you know, all of a sudden you're hearing about, okay, hey, we were doing this 2-mile piece, you know, last year or last week or some other point in time, this is the time standard at these rates. Mm-hmm. And then you think, oh, like, you know, it's interesting that we have that score. You know, there's no telling, you know, how tired we were compared to that point last year, or, you know, were there other factors in play that would lead to success of the previous year versus this year? But it's interesting to see, like, hey, you know, we knew what the end result was, how we finished last year, and this is where that we were at that point. I think it's a job of a coach to say, you know, you've got all these factors in play with the numbers and the times and, you know, individuals you're working with, and you know that, you know, maybe in high school or college or even afterwards when you're working a job, you have stresses throughout your day, and you can only push people so hard. You have to be careful of, you know, not only measuring everything, but then also realizing there's a, you know, human beings in the boat. And
well, I think, you know, one of the things that you just sort of touched on there that that I've heard a few times, I think is really important from a coaching perspective, is, you know, what data now and technologies allowing us as coaches to do, and or allowing any coaches out there to do. And, you know, I come back to something somebody told me once, which was, you know, you can tell an athlete to do something 10% of the time, or something. You can show them.
Would you? I'm just going to interrupt you real quick. Would you mind just restarting that? There's just a brief cutout, so you can.
Yeah. No.
You can tell an athlete to do something, or
you can tell an athlete to do something, and, you know, they may remember it 5-10% of the time. You can show an athlete, you know, what they're doing, and so on. And they're more likely to remember it. You know, now we move up to maybe it's 50% of the time and the changes happen and so on. And or, you know, the final step is you can involve the athlete. And now all of a sudden you see they recognize what's occurring and they understand. And now the change actually becomes concrete. So, you know, rather than say, you know, Lou, it'd be really great if you put your blade in the water, you know, and then, oh, that might resonate with you during the practice. We could also look at video and I could show you that you're not putting your blade in the water. And now it might, you know, sink in a little bit more, or we can take the like next bit and we can really involve you in the process and say, hey, listen, Lou, you're not putting your blade in the water. Let me show you how you're not doing it. And let's, you know, engage in a way and look at the numbers and look at the impact when you do put your blade in water. And now all of a sudden we've used technology and we've used data to actually make a difference. And it's not just, you know, oh, Henry was telling me that I should put my blade in the water and maybe he's right, maybe he's just being mean or something like that. And it elevates the entire discussion. And it just gives this coach a incredible, you know, tool to help move those things along. And, you know, it's a huge piece of it is the understanding, right? It's not that you're actively not trying to put your blade in the water potentially. I mean, maybe you are, maybe, but, you know, but that's right. That's an interesting piece here that now coaches can basically have a more informed, more engaged conversation with the athletes.
So I think on that aspect too, I mean, so I've been in boats and you're not the only coach who's ever told me I need to get the blade in the water, which, you know, probably doesn't come as a surprise to you. And in college, I remember, you know, hearing that or another phrase about some way I need to improve my technique. And if I started making the change, I'd get, you know, the coach would say, yes, it's good. And then, you know, usually someone will come up to ask me and say, hey, I felt that. That was really good. Yeah. And that's a very, I mean, there's so much going on in the boat with, you know, in a men's heavyweight eight, there's a lot of forces being applied there.
A lot of mass
floating around. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it was very uplifting to hear that, but I think if I could, you know, if I had seen like data of the coach saying you are letting the team down every time you're not putting the blade in because you are slowing the boat down, you know, X percent. And then I could say like, okay, I mean, you know, my thought was before I need to pull it as hard as I can. And doing that, I am slowing the boat down, whatever percent, you know, and then I could say, all right, like the focus needs to be rowing in time with these guys. And, you know, then the boat's faster than, you know, that boat, you know, then we're going back to the whole purpose of this is saying, well, what's the best way to get the boat from point A to point B as fast as possible.
Yeah, we should have brought that up earlier, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do here with all these tools is how do we move from point A to point B as quickly as possible? And you know, for me personally, I want to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible, ideally in front of the competitors and in a perfect world, having expended as little energy as possible. Like if I can do it more efficiently, right? If we can have a think about that.
Especially in a multi-day regatta. I mean, you're burning a lot of energy doing 2K after 2K. You have to win qualify as easily as you can.
Exactly.
Or the alternative, I guess, is if you're seated poorly, you can be a hero on day one, but then that's a different goal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, one of the final things is we, you know, because you and I can obviously talk about this for hours.
Yeah.
The other question I would ask is, what is the opportunity cost of not looking at this information, right? What are you leaving on the table? And you and I have talked a lot about the time commitment with a sport like rowing, you know, how much you're putting into it, going down the boathouse, all this stuff that goes around it, and thinking about how you're being efficient and, you know, basically maximizing what you're putting into the sport. And I think personally, that if you're not looking at this stuff, you're leaving money on the table every time.
Yeah. So I think with the amount of volume that goes into competitive rowing with the training, it's really easy to overtrain the athletes if you don't have a game plan in mind. How are you doing this? How are you measuring how the boat's getting faster? You need to be as efficient as possible. And they're either usually in class or some sort of job. You can't waste their time.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, like you said before, it's great if you can tell them something. It's even better if you can show them afterwards, or if they can get instant feedback during practice. That that is the best. If you can show them, you are almost in the same power curve as everyone else in the boat, but we'll get faster if you do this instead. And then you can reinforce that later. I think it takes a lot of the guessing out of the coach's mind by just having the data laid out, and then they can focus on the human aspect more.
Absolutely. And, I was sort of, you reminded me of an experience I had at university where, one year we were completely rubbish, and the next year we were, much, much better, infinitely better. And it's not necessarily that the ingredients changed, and it's not necessarily that the time commitment changed. There was efficiency and an acknowledgement of what was going on and using information to basically to optimize the work we were doing. Hugely mm-hmm. important when you're dealing with students. How can we do all this and so on? I think it's absolutely, it's exciting. And it's exciting to see this evolve. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know that's kind of, you and I had talked about wanting to take a 30,000 foot view and ask those questions today as we get this series started. What do you think?
I think that's a good overview. I mean, we talked about laying the framework of this podcast. We want to discuss not just all the cool toys and tech out there, but what are good ways to collect the data and how does it make you faster? You don't collect toys for the sake of having toys all the time.
Well, not all.
All the time. Yeah, not all the time. And so, then we went into, talking about what are the missed opportunities by not doing, data management, data analysis. And I think, overall, that was a good first overview of how we want to go with this. So do you have any other remarks before we close this out?
No, I mean, just, I hope that anyone that tuned in, would love to have you join us again. We're pretty excited about this stuff and wanting to, dig deeper into it. So, please come back. Lou and I will be here. We're always chatting about this stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes we record it. So we thought we'd get a start to it.
Very cool. All right. Well, just to reiterate, Rowing Data is part of the Rowing Chat Network. You can get email notifications of new shows by joining our mailing list at www.rowing.chat. Listen to other shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. Well, I can't read. All right, till next time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lou. Thank you, everyone. This is fun. We'll do this.
All right, I think that's it. Bye, Henry.